have something to say, like...
Do me a favor, Sam. Don't say nothing, okay? Just stand there till I leave. I want to remember this. I've never done it before.
Never done what?
Had my heart broken.
Welcome to another episode of the Download Podcast Show. I am Darren Jenkins.
And I'm Chris Saunders.
And on today's show, we are discussing the 2008 film, The Whackness, which was interesting. cast Josh Peck, Olivia Thirlby, Ben Kingsley, Famke Janssen, Mary-Kate Olsen, and Method Man. Directed by Jonathan Levine, or Levine, I don't know how you pronounce it. It's the summer of 1994, and the streets of New York are pulsing with hip-hop. Set against this backdrop, a lonely teenager named Luke Shapiro spends his last summer before university selling marijuana throughout New York City, trading it with his unorthodox psychotherapist for treatment, all the while having a crush on his stepdaughter.
Where did you get that description from?
From IMDb.
Okay. You want to hear the Amazon Prime description?
This should be good.
New York, summer 1994, the greatest year in hip-hop. A troubled teenage drug dealer trades pot for therapy sessions with a drug-addled psychiatrist intent on living his life to the fullest. The two form an unlikely friendship, but things get complicated when the kid falls for the doctor's stepdaughter.
Which one do we like better?
You know, I mean, this one's pretty good, but it's really, I wanted to highlight the greatest year in hip hop.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talk about that now or later, but let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. We'll have to have that conversation. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the one thing I'll immediately say was this soundtrack was sick. It was. Like, it's appropriate, right? Because this is the 50th anniversary of hip hop, and so this kind of fits the motif of that. This is actually, it felt like this was kind of like Garden State on hip hop.
Baby Driver.
Oh yeah, Baby Driver. Yeah,
because it's very much the guy has his whatever. I can't remember if it was a tape player, or an iPad, or a CD player, but he always has his music on him. It was very much similar to this one with Luke. Well, IMDb 6.9 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes from the critics 71%, from the audience 72%. So it's all pretty aligned there.
Yeah, but did you check out the budgets in the box office for this though?
I couldn't find the budget. I found the box office. Did you find the budget?
Yeah. The budget was $6 million. And the box office was
$3.1. Oh, shit. They lost money.
Which is weird, because, like, all the, you look at, like a lot of the reviews, everybody loved this movie. Like, all the critics were, wow, this is great. This is fantastic. I'm like...
Well, I have to say, I don't really remember the previews for this that much. So maybe the marketing plan wasn't very good. But you have such a big name like Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
You have Famke Janssen. Yeah. This was in 2008. So this is after X-Men.
Yep.
She should have been well known there. And then you have Mary-Kate Olsen.
Right.
And Method Man. Some other recognizable names, if not famous, but recognizable. I will say Josh Peck and Olivia Thirlby being the two kind of main protagonists. I've never heard of them before.
Really? Did you not see Judge Dredd?
Yeah.
She's in Judge Dredd. She's one of the main characters in Judge Dredd.
The original or the remake? I assume the original, the remake.
Not the Stallone version.
I mean, honestly, I don't remember that movie. It wasn't very good to me.
Okay, so there you go. I like Olivia Thirlby. I actually follow her on Instagram. Hello.
All right. Okay.
But this dude, the Josh, I be honest, I've seen him in some stuff. He doesn't register as anybody. I'm like, wow, he's awesome.
I looked at his IMDb, and I hardly recognize anything that he's been in. So,
yeah.
That being said, I thought he was serviceable in this film. You know, above serviceable, like did a decent job. So you recommended this film. Why? Well, how did you come across it? Because again, I didn't see the previews. I
don't remember. So this was unusual because the reason why I recommend it was two reasons. One, because, and I think the most prominent reason was because of the soundtrack. This was like, if you look online, this is like always on a list of films with great soundtracks. It's like no matter what list you look on, it's on the list somewhere. And you know, if you like hip hop, this is a great soundtrack for you.
Well, it's funny because they highlight Biggie's album that had come out at the time.
Yeah.
Ready to Die. What was it? Ready to Die.
Yeah, Ready to Die. Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. And a specific song with Method Man, which we will discuss later.
So, and then the second reason is because a lot of people were talking about this film. Like there are a lot of reviews, like a lot of people love this film, like critic wise, but for some unknown reason, I don't know what the reason is, but no one else likes it but the critics.
The audience gave it 72.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess, again, yeah. I don't know what the sample size is for that, but
yeah, I mean,
still, take it with a grain of salt.
So those are my reasons why I chose it.
Okay,
and so and for me, the soundtrack didn't disappoint. I didn't know what to expect from the movie, to be honest. It feels like this was kind of a warm up for Ben Kingsley's role in Iron Man.
I mean, I was thinking about that. It's different enough not to be. Yeah, it's a warm up. That's a good description. Interesting character in this film.
Yeah.
It's based. This was made in 2008, but it's based in 94. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, you see how Luke, the main character, like uses music as an escape. He does it with his parents throughout the film, just like blasting music because they're fighting. And again, well, we mentioned Baby Driver and Garden State, but also Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, right? True.
Mm-hmm. So I see some similarities there in the way they use music.
Yeah, this is... I think this is kind of like almost unusual for us. I feel like this is kind of like this actually is kind of similar to our conversation we were having last night, which is where the soundtrack for this, to me, the soundtrack is the star. The movie is almost takes a backseat to the soundtrack in a lot of ways. Cause I didn't hate the movie. I don't know. It was the soundtrack was much better than the movie, though. I'm sorry, it carried like if they had swapped out for like an indie rock type vibe to this, maybe I'm not watching this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, this is based in 94, they're graduating high school. I mean, I graduated in 90 in 2000, so it's not far off. So,
yeah.
Yes. If I had watched this movie, if this movie came out when I was in high school or even in college, I think I would have identified with it more. And there's things like, make me nostalgic, you know, unrequited love and like, you know, being that age and like, or even just having a crush on a girl. Right. So I can identify with that. But I'm 41 now and like, it's kind of like, almost seems like a movie for, well, I would say for younger people, but then you have a soundtrack that younger people wouldn't even know about, right?
They wouldn't even know about it. Yeah, exactly. So it's a little weird, right?
Maybe in 2008, it would still work.
Well, I guess we can attribute it to the fact that Jonathan Levine, the films that he's done, are kind of like, so he did Warm Bodies. He did Long Shot with Seth Rogen. He did The Night Before with Seth Rogen, 50-50 with Seth Rogen.
Oh, Snatched. Good.
So you see where we're going with this, right? Mike and Dave need wedding dates. I mean, so you can see where his mindset happens to be. So
yeah, I mean, those were a mix of production and directing. Yeah. Rush, he did Rush.
Yeah,
but he doesn't have a huge catalog.
No, I think actually the biggest movie he's probably done is might be Mike and Dave. I don't even know. So,
but yeah. We'll talk about rating of the film later. But again, with the throwbacks, we see within the first 5-10 minutes, Nintendo, Legend of Zelda, Game Boy, and the whole mixtapes thing.
Yeah. Oh, mixtapes. Yeah.
I used to make mixtapes. I'm sure you did too.
Yep.
Now it's playlists. We were talking about last night, which is content.
Yep.
That's an early form of content curation, mixtapes. Yep.
I was thinking about that while we were watching. I'm like, oh, okay. This dude is actually a content creator. Okay.
Yes, sir.
The dude, what was the guy who was dating Olivia Thirlby? Why does he look familiar? Like,
that is a good question.
He looks so familiar. I want to say
I didn't even think about it at the time. But
did you see what's that movie where the girl like wakes up and dies, like she dies every day or something like that? Happy Birthday.
Oh, Death Day. I didn't see it. We were supposed to do that, actually.
Yeah.
Well, here he is. Aaron Ju. Or sorry, you. Aaron Ju. What? Man, he's... Oh, let's see. I'm like looking at his picture. I'm like, he looks really old. He was in the 2009 Friday the 13th. He was in Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is probably what I remember him from.
Yeah, maybe that's where I'm remembering him from.
They got him here for Disturbia 21. Oh, 20. I didn't see that movie, but yes, that's that gambling one. So, yeah, I mean, he's been in some stuff.
Yeah.
He had made an appearance in The Blacklist.
Oh, maybe it was that too.
Yeah, okay. So he's got a bunch of stuff I recognize, unlike the main character, the lead character, actor. Yeah, oh, man, him, that guy. Well, just annoying. But at least the Asian guy got the girl, because we don't see that a lot.
Yeah, that's true, right? Maybe this is the Mount Everest of the beginning. He should get an award for that, because trust me, that was not the usual case back in that in 94, this, and certainly not in 2008.
This movie and Romeo Must Die.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's about it. Which we are scheduled to do as well.
Hell yeah.
We already read the synopsis, but like the premise of this movie is insane.
Yep.
Like not just a drug dealing high schooler, but like dude's got bricks on bricks on bricks.
Yeah.
In his room.
Yeah.
I mean, so I actually knew folks that like would go to parties and bring a brick of weed. So I guess it's not in high school. So I guess it's not that crazy. It's just like, it's still crazy.
Yeah. I do like the fact that they kind of kept pounding into the movie, the whole thing with Giuliani. They're like, Giuliani.
Yeah.
Fuck that Giuliani, dude.
Foreshadowing, great.
Yeah, that was a lot of weed for him to be having in his apartment. Like, it was so hilarious because his parents are such fuck ups.
So that's my question. Did they know he was selling weed?
I think they knew. Because it doesn't.
They don't address
it. Allude to it. It's like, oh, you think I should sell weed? Like, I was like.
Did he say it?
Yeah.
It's just like he just walks in, like, here's money for rent. Or, like, you know, yeah, I got 24 G's. Like, I'm like, where do y'all
he didn't this blink
coming from? He's yeah.
Yeah, my mom would have been like, where the hell did you get $24,000? Give me that money. Give me the money.
Yeah, let's return it to the cops.
Yeah.
Give it to the police. Side note, selling out of the IC cart was a nice touch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a throwback for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, in reality, he should have been caught several times in that movie, but we won't get into all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, they set it up in the beginning of the movie, like that first scene where you think you're watching a therapy session when you're really watching a drug transaction, and you know you're like, what? Wait, what is going on here? You there? Oh no. Pause. Yep.
Where did we leave off?
I don't recall, but let's keep. Let's.
Well, I mean, we were talking about the music. I was talking about the opening track in the subway.
Oh right.
When you've got his narration, and he's got the music on, listening to it, like, again, using it as an escape. But I found IMDb trivia saying that the song was originally Bonita Applebum by Tribe. But once they put it on streaming, they had to switch it for assuming copyright reasons. Similar tempos. The songs have similar tempos. I guess Bonita Applebum would go better with the scene because of the lyrics. But
the lyrics and what he was, wasn't he talking about? He loves girls. He loves disco girls.
Well, that's one of my WTF moments, is he's just like staring at that girl's legs, and like as she uncrosses and crosses her legs, he's like not even hiding it. I was like, dude, come on, man.
Creepy.
That's the word.
Apropos for the New York subways in the 90s, so it was kind of a creepy spot to be in. The soundtrack starts off pretty, I mean, The World Is Yours. It's not. It's just like, damn.
Well, I guess that's my question. That's a strong track. And if they were actually allowed to use Bonita Applebaum, would that have started us off differently? Would you say weaker or just different?
I don't know. That's hard. Because I think they look just a little. The two songs are there's some similarities in there, but Bonita Applebaum is kind of more like of a kind of a comical type feel to it in a way,
which fits that scene
a little bit more than say the world is yours. Like I don't know what it had to do with what was going on.
Well, since that's the opening scene, The World Is Yours may actually fit the film as a whole.
Yeah, I guess.
Because we're talking about a guy that's about to graduate. He got into his college, you know, the world, you know, maybe, I don't know if there was any thinking like that behind it, but.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out whether he, like, a kid like him is able to successfully navigate selling weed. Like, I mean, the dudes he was buying from, like, you know, I'm pretty sure I, even as a black man, I'm not trying to go up in there.
Well, let's talk about that now. So that also introduces the second song, which is the what? Biggie and Method Man. And Method Man is actually in this scene.
Yeah.
As Luke's dealer, supplier.
Yeah.
And he is Jamaican.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for your thoughts on that.
I might not be the best source here. Maybe we should have had one of my Jamaican relatives in as a guest. To me, the accent was pretty horrible.
It was so overly done. And I was like, is there a reason? Like, did he have to be Jamaican? And like, there is no reason for him to have been Jamaican in this movie. He could have been him.
No. Yeah. I imagine Meth was like, oh man, I've been working on my Jamaican accent. Let me break it out for this movie.
They're like, oh, okay.
Nah, bruh. Nah.
There's really no reason for that. And I mean, I'm always happy to see Method Man. But in this case, I was like, you could have left your accent at home. We're good. Mm-hmm. Like, the role didn't require it. I was just trying to figure out, like, you know, how this kid would have come to be working for a dude like him.
Yeah, we need a prequel to this movie.
That's a whole buddy. That's a buddy film right there.
The cool thing of the scene is music discovery, right? We see it in action, right? Like Meth's character, which I should probably use his character's name. What was his name?
Percy,
which is funny because that's how I introduced myself. My first year of college, I introduced myself as Percy to everybody. And 4 years later, people were like, hey, Percy. My name's Chris.
Why in the world were you introducing yourself as Percy?
It's a long story. I actually started in high school, but anyway, I'm stupid. That's the short answer. So Percy is playing some Biggie and Method Man in his spot, and Luke's like, "Yo, what's that? That sounds dope." And it's a new album, which is cool for Luke because like he's not gonna be like, "I heard this from my drug supplier," so he can be like the first guy to discover this album. So and that was always the dope thing in like the '90s, like, "Oh, this new CD is coming out. I'll be the first to hear it. I want to throw that shit on a, you know, well." Going back to the 70s too, 60s, I'm sure, with the records instead of CDs or even like, yeah, cassette tapes, yeah man.
That was the best. That was like the best time
we talked about so much shit last night. We also talked about deep listening last night too.
And this is definitely a movie that deep listening could have been in this movie, you know, where he's just like laid out on a rooftop somewhere with his headphones and like listening to.
Like, yeah, I mean, but he does. He's in his room and he's just or in the living room. He's just got the music playing. He's not doing anything else, you know.
Yeah.
For people that don't know, deep listening is just you just put on an album. Gotta be an album. Don't put on like a random playlist. Put on an album. You listen it from beginning to end. You don't have your phone out. You don't got the TV on in the background. You're not talking to nobody on the phone.
Right.
You're focused on that shit.
You're not shuffling the song, the music.
Beginning to end. So try it sometimes, man. It's quite.
Yeah, what was
it's quite an experience.
I remember what album? Oh, we were talking about the Pink Floyd album. That's what we were talking about, right? As a deep listening exercise, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we were out last night for our friend JT, our friend and co-host on the 007,
yep.
Download 007, doing a, did a night at Cafe Wa, did Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, the whole album, and it was pretty dope. Anyway, so... That scene, again, like the music in that scene is just, it's just on, right? It's just the guy's just playing it. Percy's just playing it. I was saying, like, the music didn't really relate to the film much. It was just stuff that Luke was listening to, like maybe Summertime, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, but, you know, they're getting out of school.
Yeah.
But it's kind of an obvious one. So
I have to ask you this question, since you're from New York. Like, was that a thing? Like you're like that, like when you got out of school, people just left town and went different, split up and didn't see each other for, you know, till September, August, September. Was that a thing?
Well, it's weird because I was thinking about that, like, not when I'm going to college.
Right.
If it was the summer before college, I'm spending the time with my friends who I'm not going to see for much for 4 years. So,
right. You're not even going to Amsterdam and shit, right?
I mean, I would, because I would go see my family who's not in the country, right? So I would go. And you know, I went to international school, so it was probably similar for a lot of other folks. So I can't speak to a regular, you know, New Yorkers, generational, like three generations in that live in New York, public school, even private school, but like are based here. I don't know. I can't speak to that.
I don't recall like that being the case, but then I'm from Newark, so out of town for us was like Jersey City.
That sounds, you know, depressing.
This is what it is, man.
Here's a trivia question for you. What was the name of Stephanie's dog?
Oh, Jesus Christ. What?
Correct.
Who calls a dog Jesus Christ? Seriously? I'm surprised that didn't spark a bunch of people naming their dogs like that.
Speaking of dogs, we have a guest today. No, she's lying down. She just, instead of letting me pick her up, she just laid down for a belly rub. But we've got Annis's cousin's dog, Lovey, here. I'm dog sitting today. All right. Well, I was going to try and pick her up, but never mind.
She's like, no, I'm good. I'm right here. Good.
Her name is Lovey, not Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Man, I don't know if there's anything specific scenes you wanted to touch on, but like the tagging up scene.
Oh, which one? The one when they get arrested?
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
And like, so we haven't even talked about we talk about Luke, who's this drug dealer.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about Dr. Squires, who is the father of a schoolmate of his, this girl he's into.
Stepfather,
yeah, which they have to correct several times in the movie. In fact, I actually adjusted that when I was reading the Amazon Prime description, because it said daughter. I changed it to stepdaughter. This guy is a psychiatrist who Luke is dealing to, as we mentioned in the synopsis.
And to a stepdaughter.
And to a stepdaughter, but he's dealing to to Dr. Squires in return for like therapy sessions,
which I gotta say is kind of brilliant.
Maybe that's what I'm saying. Like the whole premise of this movie is nuts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for those of us who know, in 94, obviously weed is illegal. Now, this is
especially during Giuliani's time.
Yeah, during Giuliani's time, when he stopped the stop and frisk or whatever. I think it was whatever they're calling it. So, he was. I don't know if I would be wanting to trust anything he says.
No,
as a therapist.
And it gets interesting towards the end as well. With their interactions, but in the tagging scene, so they go out drinking. Oh my God. They go out drinking.
Yeah.
Dr. Squires brings him to a bar where he thinks he can get Luke laid. Yeah. And then it's all eyes come in. The girl played by Mary-Kate Olsen.
Yeah.
and then Dr. Squires ends up. Dr. Squires is old. First of all, he's already older than his wife.
Yeah.
Like, already looks older than his wife. And then he hooks up with a younger woman, girl, dare I say. And actually, I was looking up the awards for this film. Awards. And the Alliance of Women Film Journalists in 2008 gave the award to this film for most egregious age difference between the leading man and the love interest. Ben Kingsley and Mary-Kate Olsen.
Wow, man. Talk about shade. Oh, man.
Oh, that's amazing.
Okay.
It actually won a couple of other things, like film festivals, was nominee. But that was the best.
Wow. It's like they decided to make up one just for this movie.
Yeah. There's no way that was an award before this happened.
I would like to know then who went on to, like, if they kept the award afterwards and if, and like what movies, what people won after that, that would be an interesting find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know if I have a few. Anyway, so Dr. Squires hooks up with this. How old do you think he is in this movie? 60?
Yeah, he's got to be in mid 60s.
And then he looks like he hooks up with a 20-year-old.
Yeah, Mary-Kate Olsen. She had to be in her. Well, if Luke is dealing to her,
she might be around the same age, but yeah, it's right. Fine. But like, it's regardless, there's like a 40-year gap.
That's a pretty big gap, man.
And then like even the bartender who's like, "That's enough of that, you two. Like you are all too young to be here anyway." Doesn't seem to give a shit about the fact that Dr. Squires is anyway. But after that, now I digressed because I was going to the tagging scene. Like Luke and Dr. Squires leave, and like they're smoking weed and shit, continuing. Well, they're already fucked up, and then Luke starts tagging up a window, and then Squires, quote unquote, tags up, but he writes his like full name, his actual name,
and MD, and
yeah. And then cops come up some stairs and see them like, hold on. And then he pumps up his sneakers.
The Reebok pump. I remember those too.
And then he says something about Forrest Gump.
He's like, Forrest Gump. And he's like, what's that supposed to mean? He's like, run.
Run. Oh my God. That whole sequence. And then he like runs really slowly, but like in the direction of the police. I couldn't deal with that. Yeah, I think that you definitely needed to be high to really enjoy that part, that scene.
There's a lot of this movie that I feel like this movie, you know, they could have like put like a warning at the beginning of the movie saying you should be high to watch this movie to thoroughly enjoy this movie. Because there's some scenes, there are a couple scenes I was just like, I didn't need to see that. I'm sorry. I'm sure you know which ones I'm talking about.
So that we kind of like explored this weird relationship between Dr. Squires and Luke.
Yeah.
But then there's this, you know, another. I would say it's the secondary story, which is Luke and Stephanie, Dr. Squires' stepdaughter, which is just a kind of a standard love story, hookup story.
Yeah.
And you know, we kind of alluded to earlier, like that unrequited love or, you know, unreturned, you know, feelings. I don't know. I'm thinking about it like, all right, maybe when I was that age, like I didn't see the signs either.
Right.
But like it seemed pretty obvious watching the film that she was just like down to hook up.
Yeah, I mean, her and her mom were very similar. Like, you don't get that until later in the movie where, you know, he's trying to make up with his wife at the same time that Josh is trying to like get with his stepdaughter, and they're like overlapping the the two scenarios to kind of show you the similarities between these two dudes, both at different parts of their life. And then it's like, there's a scene when the doctor realizes that he's trying to get with Stephanie, he's like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Well, I mean, he's also, you know, that was again another part of their relationship, which was like, Dr. Squires and Luke, which was like this. Well, obviously you have the psychiatrist and patient angle, but it blends into this friendship slash almost father son thing. Cause clearly Luke has no respect for his dad in this movie. He actually tells him to be a man and fix it when his dad like loses all their money. So he for some reason, like he sees Dr. Squires as this, but like that guy's also fucked up. They're very similar themselves. So in this situation, it seems like Dr. Squires is like projecting. He ends up being right, but he's like projecting like his own relationship onto Luke and Stephanie. And it's not even to be like a father figure to Stephanie. Like, you know, my stepdaughter's not having sex. You know, it's more just like, oh, she's just like her mother. Like she's going to fucking, you know, she's going to break your heart. So yeah, that was an interesting thing. And then there's also another scene where like, their roles kind of flip where like Luke is kind of like psychoanalyzing Dr. Squires as well.
Yeah. This guy was going through clearly going through, well, he's too old to be going through midlife crisis. I think he's just an old dude who just was pining for trying to, like to Luke said, you're just this old guy who's trying to make up for mistakes that you made in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And essentially vicariously like living through Luke.
I did enjoy him as a drug dealer, so there's that.
Did we notice the Michael Jackson reference in this movie?
Oh, that was great, actually. That was great.
You know what? I've actually, well, not as ungracefully as Josh did in this movie. The guy that plays Luke, but you know, he has his first kiss with her and then like he starts dancing down the street. Yeah, we've all had that feeling. But in this particular scene, they have the Billie Jean sidewalk lighting up as he steps on the different sections.
Yeah, that was
like, it was dope, but it was also like way out of place. They didn't really do anything like that in any other part of the film.
Right, so yeah, like, right.
Okay, I get it. I get it. I understand it, but strange. And then we talked about this before, they had to say the whackness in the actual movie.
I was waiting for like how they were gonna do that, and it was a little bit of a stretch. Because she's like, well, you only see the whackness. But then I have to ask, Mike, like, well, if you think he's such Captain Negativo, why the hell are you with him? Like, what would be the point?
I assume like it feels like maybe the script was untitled for a while, and then you know they settled on that because maybe that's supposed to be the peak moment in the movie, which I wouldn't say it is, but it kind of feels like a passing moment. I mean, and she also says like, I focus on the dopeness. Like, all right, why don't we call it the dope?
Right.
Or is the whackness, you know, him getting his heart broken. And I'm actually not sure how to analyze this movie, like what I got out of it, but, except maybe nostalgia.
I think nostalgia because there's no, I don't know. The way it ended, and we'll get to it at the time. I didn't take anything away. I didn't go, wow, lesson learned. You know, I just was like, all right, it's over. Okay.
Well, maybe as we can continue talking, we'll figure it out. But, and then it's like, no, the whole Fire Island.
Oh God!
So they go to Fire Island. Luke and Stephanie go to Fire Island for the weekend. She's like, "What does she call it?" She calls it a honeymoon. She's like, "Do you know what people do on a honeymoon?" Yeah. And I don't know how long they've been like hanging out,
Yeah, that should have been
another red flag. I mean, because clearly it's before August. So that means it's within That's 2 true. Months.
Yeah.
It's from them leaving, graduating, which is in June, right? To before August, because August is when he's all depressed and shit. So it's like
a month and a half or so.
So they're not seeing each other for that long. That should have been a red flag for him already.
Excuse me.
She also says on the same trip, yeah, I've done it 100 times. So, and that didn't sway him either. Like, dude,
because he was in love. He's in love. That's all he sees. He thought the perfect thing, the perfect storm, it came along. You know, like, dude.
So, but in this whole weekend, you know, they're about to hook up, and she's just like, you know, you're not really hard. And he can't get it up, and they, you know, they stop, and then they try again, and it's again, no,
yeah,
because he finishes in like a second, and she's like, "Are you crying?" Oh my god! And then no, he said they actually get the deed done, and he's like, "I love you," and she goes. Yeah. Whoa, dude. Whoa. Just all of that was just so hard. That was unlike his penis. That was so hard to watch.
It was every bad scenario that we've ever seen in every high school romance drama, all in one fucking scene. And it was horrifying to watch. She broke him down, boy. She broke him down. I felt bad. I mean, I really did feel bad for him because I was like, mm-mm.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was like, poor Luke. You know, again, I can identify with, you know, unrequited, you know, love, like unreturned feelings. You know, I mean, we all can. So it's like, and he's the main protagonist. So you're going to, you know, feel for him. But yeah. I don't identify with the stuff that happened. In the at Fire Island.
Well, it's Fire Island, so there's that. Yeah. They should rebrand Fire Island. What happens in Fire Island stays in Fire Island, or something like that, like Vegas.
Well, she at the very least seemed very understanding about everything until he said, "I love you," and then essentially she ghosts him.
That was.
And we can all identify with that too, being ghosted.
Yeah, actually, might be this if this could have been the first case of ghosting, this might have been the first case of actual ghosting on cinema.
So. It is possible. Maybe that's where everyone got it from. And then anyway, so this is like that's pretty much the story, right? He's a drug dealer. He starts this relationship with this girl. He has this weird relationship with the psychiatrist, who's the girl's stepfather. And then the relationship with the girl ends. He goes to college. The big thing is Dr. Squire is like having a, you know, essentially divorcing, separating from his wife, and then having a breakdown. Where he's just doing a ton of drugs and then like tries to kill himself in the ocean, which was another what the fuck. I mean, just Dr. Squires in general was a what the fuck moment.
Yeah, his whole thing was a what the fuck moment, I think. He was a... Well, I mean, like I said, I actually kind of wonder if when they were creating the Mandarin in Iron Man, if they didn't use this character as reference material for building that character, because this dude, he had a lot of interesting flaws, and you know, toward the end there, you see kind of him going back on whatever drugs that he was. Trying to free himself of,
mm-hmm.
But he was on the drugs. He was taking the drugs when they first started this movie, and he was crazy then. So I don't know how much those drugs are going to help him anyway.
Yeah, it's just one of those situations where I think we have a character that's like unredeemable.
Yeah,
like he doesn't progress. It seems like he might be progressing, but we don't see it happening at the end. Like he's taking the first step, but we don't know what happened to that character now, right? So,
right.
Yeah, we talked about that with what was that John Cusack movie we did?
The record.
Anyway, yeah, just the character was completely irredeemable. Like, just never did anything remotely good. But anyway, so you know, that's essentially it. One of his last lines in this movie is, "Try and fuck a black girl. I never got the chance in college."
Yeah, that was so, really my what the fuck moment there. That, yeah, timeless.
But yeah, I mean, that's essentially it. It was interesting. I wasn't necessarily bored during the film. I could have skipped through like all the teenagers' sex scenes, but you know.
Yeah, I actually did skip through some of that shit. I was like, I don't need to see all that. I get it.
Mm-hmm. But, I think during one of those scenes they play Bump and Grind by He Who Shall Not Be Named. I'm surprised they didn't change, you know, switch those songs once it went to streaming.
Yeah.
But man, like, yeah, the soundtrack, man, we talked about some of the songs, but like, and I'm looking over the tracks now and like, there might be some that kind of relate to the film, like Dr. Squires at the bar with Luke plays Season of the Witch by Donovan, which maybe it's referring to his wife.
Yeah.
Biz Markie, Just a Friend, which arguably could be one of our final questions. I mean, you got, again, Total. When's the last time you heard that name? Wow. With Biggie, Can't You See, Can I Kick It, Tribe, You Used to Love Me, Faith Evans. Flavor in Your Ear, Craig Mack.
Yep.
I guess I should be happy that the reggae song, there was only one reggae track in a movie about weed.
Yeah, the Pioneers.
Long Shot, Kick the Buckets, Pioneers. And then they have I'm not listing all the ones, just the ones I wrote down. All the Young Dudes from Mott the Hoople. So, I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of recognizable names, dope tracks, dope songs that, you know, you remember from 94.
Summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite quotes or other what the fuck? No, I stole your what the fuck moment.
That's a good question. I don't know about how many quotes I really, be honest. What the fuck moment for me was the daydream scene with the yearbook that he had going on in his bedroom. That's severely uncomfortable shit that I don't want to see. And at angle that they shot it, like, you know, with like you're almost looking down his chest, down to where I'm like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to see all that.
Yeah, that was a directing what the fuck.
That might be.
Thanks, Jonathan. Much appreciated.
That might be like the all-time crotch shot, I guess.
I had a few quotes. I think the best quote of the movie is the homeless guy in jail when they said, "What are you in for?" I stabbed my wife in the pussy. That's probably the best quote in the film in movie history, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, if only the only way it would have been better is if it was Samuel Jackson saying it.
Motherfucker, I stabbed my wife in the pussy, motherfucker. Yeah. All right. Add a motherfucker so you ignorant niggas hear me. I don't know. When Luke says he's depressed and Dr. Squires is like, has this got something to do with Kurt Cobain?
Oh my God.
Because this dude doesn't even listen to like grunge or like rock. It's like almost purely hip hop until the end.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Squire is quoting Biggie, another, I'm not even going to. Anyway. What else? What other what the fuck moments? Oh, Method Man's Jamaican accent. Yep. Mm-hmm.
When he's, when, what's his name? The doctor is talking to dude about having sex, and he's like, young men need sex, Luke. All men, actually. I can get you a hooker if you like.
Yep.
He's like, I was this close to respecting you. Big mistake, Luke. Big mistake.
Okay, wait. So we started the podcast with this. Before we get to our final questions, 1994, greatest year in hip hop.
Oh yeah.
I have another year as a contender.
Okay.
But what did you think about that in the synopsis?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know if it's. I would say it could be true. I don't know. But I don't know if it is. I'm trying to remember back in 94, like if that would have been, I could think 97 was pretty decent.
Can you see my screen?
Can I see your screen? I can share your screen.
Oh, I thought I was sharing already. How about now?
There it goes.
Okay, here's 94. Starts out pretty crazy with Illmatic, Ready to Die.
Yeah. Wow, that is pretty good.
I mean, you got, well, I don't remember this album, but Gravediggers, Six Feet Deep. Gangstar,
Gangstar.
Hard to Earn, Regulate, Warren G.
Yeah.
I mean, Common released an album. Redman released an album.
The Beastie Boys, they're legendary. Ill Communication.
Beastie Boy, Digable Planets, Coolio. Method Man released an album. I mean, I don't recognize some of these albums, but Fugees, Blunted on Reality.
Yeah.
Public Enemy released an album. So you got a lot of albums, like Beat Nuts, a lot of recognizable artists. Craig Mack, Funk the World.
Lords of the Underground.
Murder Was the Case. Oh, yeah. Snap. Master P released an album. So, Slick, you know, Rick. Slick Daddy Rick, Kane. Big Daddy Kane. So I'm not naming a lot of these album names because I don't recognize some of them, but there were a bunch. Now let's look at 97.
Yeah.
Biggie, Life After Death, Wu-Tang Forever.
Yeah.
The War Report, Capone and Noriega, yeah. Superfly, Super Duper Fly, Missy Elliott. Common has another album, In My Lifetime, Jay-Z. Disaster Strikes, Busta Rhymes, which is that was our shit in high school, my crew.
PMD, Camp Low.
Mm-hmm. Bone Thugs released an album, but not the one, you know.
KRS-One. Not,
yep, Scarface, Master P again. Mace Harlem World, as you might not like the guy, but that album has some bangers on it, produced by Puffy, right? Which Nuts. Also Puff Daddy, No Way Out.
Yep.
Beat Nuts released an album too. Mac 10.
The Artifacts.
There's more in this list that I saw earlier.
Mystical.
Yep. The Firm.
Tupac.
LL Cool J Phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Yeah.
Yeah. Tupac's Are You Still Down? And then one of my other albums of that era, Wyclef Carnival. So just saying, it's arguable that 94 was the greatest year in hip hop because this year, 97, was pretty damn solid.
I'd say 94 to 97 was probably the greatest 3 years of music in the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just ridiculous amount of people that are
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Okay. So yeah, they got an argument there. That's true.
I would like anyone who's listening, post on our social media. What was your greatest year of hip hop? 94, 97, some other year.
Yeah. If there's another year that rivals those 2 years, I'd love to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah.
So, I don't know, are you ready? But,
yeah. Am I ready? Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
All right. I don't know. I don't even know. Yeah, let's just use all three of our heavy hitters. Pun intended, Will Smith. Could Michelle Yeoh, Tom Hanks, or Will Smith be in this film? In what role? And would they make it better?
Will Smith could definitely be in this movie. I think in all of these cases, you almost actually have to write new roles in for them. Since Summertime is in this movie, they could somehow figure a way of like putting him on the tube or something like that. But I don't want to make a Method Man, because I think that I don't want to stereotype just because he's black, he should be in that role. So maybe he could be like somebody at Josh's school.
He could be the Asian dude who stole Stephanie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, that would be kind of cool.
What do you? How do you feel about Tom Hanks as Dr. Squires?
Oh, actually, that would be interesting. That would actually be funnier because he's so straight. If he pulls it off, it would be really funny. It would be really funny. And Michelle. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know where she would
She could be that stoner chick that he sells to, the blonde girl that calls Dr. Squires in the end. I think so. I think Michelle Yeoh can do anything. So I
Eleanor, think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Michelle can do anything everywhere all at once.
Yeah, I would accept that. If she's a young, like the Michelle Yeoh from that time period, yes, she could do that.
And our second question we're going to use, I don't know. We usually ask, we still used to ask Tears in Heaven. We've moved on to No Diggity. I think there's an argument for both. Could it be in the soundtrack and where? I mean, Tears in Heaven, just because Dr. Squires likes the older stuff and the more of the rock, I think maybe he would be someone that would be like, oh, you need to listen to this.
Yeah. Well, it could be in there. It could be in that scene where he's talking to his wife while he's laying in bed playing a guitar.
Maybe that's the song he's playing on the guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And No Diggity, yeah, of course. I mean,
it's 2 years after this film. It's 96, but I think it still works.
Still works. Yeah, definitely. 100%.
So, 100%. I don't know. I mean, No Diggity. It could have been any of the sex scenes.
Any of the sex scenes. It could be in that rooftop scene in when they were partying. Which I was trying to figure out where, because the view was like really, hey!
Here, she finally let me pick her up. Hello, here's Lovey, everybody. Hopefully we'll release this video. We'll get some cute points. Lovey, it's over here. Who's this?
Who's that? What? Hey, what's up?
So definitely No Dig. I mean, that's just a classic, all-time classic hip-hop R&B song.
Yeah. I get extra points if they put that in there, actually.
And do you have your favorite song and the song that encompasses the film?
For a film that was... This film is... I don't know. It's hard for me to pick a favorite because I feel like I'd be betraying if I don't... So my favorite one probably for all this is probably... Uh, It Was a Good Day by Ice Cube.
That was in there?
Yeah, it was in there.
What?
Yeah. You don't hear it very long, but it's in there.
I completely missed that one. You know what? I wrote down Can I Kick It, but like, I think Summertime is the most underrated
hip-hop
song of all time. Like, there's some great lyrics in that song.
Yeah.
And it's just such a story, like a storytelling and descriptive and visual.
It goes back to what we were talking about last night, how the song, like how you can envision the song, like the story behind the song. He just does a good, well, just telling the story in the lyrics.
Yeah. Anyway, so I say Can I Kick It, because that's also a classic, but
yes, it is.
Summertime. Can I Kick It? Honorable mention, but Summertime is my favorite song on this, the soundtrack. And what about Encompassing?
I'm going to stick with the opening song, The World Is Yours by Nas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought about it when we were talking about it earlier. I might have to change. So I initially there was all the young dudes that plays at the end. The mixtape that was for Luke, and he's listening to it, and it goes into the closing credits. Lyrically, it's not really relevant. But it is about like coming of age, which this film is kind of about.
Yep.
So that's why I thought that fit. It talks about like the lyrics are very much like talking about different people and what they're doing now, and like. Does talk about like graduation and stuff. So
yeah.
I thought that worked, but I think I like your answer.
World Is Yours?
I think The World Is Yours, I think, is more overall, right? We're looking at Luke again, like graduating. He actually, like, throughout this film, figured out what he wants to do. Like, he wants to be a psychiatrist like Dr. Squires.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world is it, right? It's the world is your oyster. Like, you know, you can do anything you want. So and I think that's how we end up in this film. So
yeah.
I concur.
Yeah.
And what are we rating this film then out of 10?
I didn't hate it. I actually, it was better than I expected it to be. Especially after that, the first, like, you have to get through, I think, the first 5 minutes of the film, to be honest, to kind of, because it's starts a little weird. But once you get into like the story between him and Olivia, his girl, you know, it starts to become a little bit interesting. So give it a 7.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was fine. I'm not going to be like.
It's not rewatchable.
I always tell people to watch the film just to have your own opinion about it. This is my opinion. You might like it better than I did. It's fine. I don't think it's rewatchable, right? There's too many like uncomfortable scenes in the film. Like I said, I don't want to watch teenagers having sex. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, Darren. I think it's just you.
But you know, there it had its moments, and it was Ben Kingsley. Like that's another question I have: is has he been awarded the SAG like Lifetime Achievement Award? Because has he?
He should if he hasn't.
He hasn't. So that leads me to my other segment. So hold up, Ben Kingsley hasn't been awarded the SAG Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah. Okay.
You know what I'm afraid is they're gonna wait until like he's too old to really, to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Give it to him now, man. Like let him soak in the riches that come with getting those type of awards.
Because you look at this, you look at like the Slattery character from Iron Man, and then you look at like Sexy Beast, which he's won awards for, right?
Sexy
like
Beast, yeah.
His range is amazing. He throws in those weird New York accents. Of course, he's British. He's Gandhi.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm digressing once again. I'm getting off the rails. Anyway, all that being said, Ben Kingsley had a great performance in this, I think. But you know, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10.
Okay. I mean, we're collectively right around the
average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'm glad I finally got it out of the way watching, but and I would listen to the soundtrack obviously because it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's right up there with like what the hell is the name of that John Cusack movie? I can't remember the name. Yeah, it's movie.
Bugged me out.
Not Empire Records. It's I forget. Whatever that movie is, it's right up there with that. It's not a movie that I would sit down and watch if it was on TV, to be honest. It would have to be like something I would
High watch. Fidelity.
High Fidelity. There you go.
Or even, I mean, or The Big Chill, right? Like, that's right. One of my all-time favorite soundtracks.
Right. It's just not something you want to relive all the time. So, cool.
I mean, I was about to ask you what you got coming up, but you had your networking event on Tuesday that went really well.
Yeah.
I had my show on Monday that went really well.
Yeah.
I think we're on hiatus for a bit. We do some podcasting in the next week or so.
We were busy the last 4 to 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a show coming up, though, in April. So.
April 1st. Yeah, I'll be at Rockwood Music Hall Stage 1. That's a free show, everybody. 5:00. Nice and early. Kids are allowed. If you want them to be exposed to like really great music. and then I might have another one April 15th up in Sylvania in Harlem. So nice. A couple things coming up.
That's good. All this good music coming out. All this good music. So maybe.
And you, but you have, but your networking events now are monthly. So, you know.
Yeah.
Early April also.
So, you know.
Probably be another one.
Yeah, there'll be another one in April. I'm not sure what the date is yet. But if you want, you can keep up with that by going to our website at nyfilmtv.com and joining our mailing list. So then you'll get invited to the next one, which hopefully will be just as good as the last two. Other than that, literally, I'm going to get something to eat. I'm going to send out invites to hire me. and yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, man. Well, this was a good one. It was a good one to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, if not just for the soundtrack.
And we hopefully will have some guests coming on soon with some if she'll do it. I don't want to put her out there, but somebody who is also a vocalist
who we have a singer songwriter friend, very talented, who texted me today with some options of movies she wants to do. So. Cool. She's going to get back to us, and maybe in a few days we'll be doing another podcast with said artist.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that.
And then we probably have a few sarcastic friends that we know will come on and also join us here and there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up then. Make sure you go out and watch The Whackness. I think it's available on Amazon Prime and Apple Plus. You can rent it there. More importantly, be sure to check us out on Instagram and Facebook at The Download Podcast Show. And just for those people who are following us, we have some changes coming your way for our new season. So, and we'll announce more as it gets closer to the change, probably in the next couple episodes. So, but all good stuff, nothing bad. Make sure to follow us. Please like and support us. It really helps us to get those likes and supports because it helps us to continue the show. I guess that wraps it up. I am Darren Jenkins.
And I'm Chris Saunders.
And this was
The Download.
See you guys. Be safe. Enjoy the rest of your week.